You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight will be landlord-tenant issues. If you have questions for my guests, our number here right in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. That's right here in the studio. But if you're calling from outside of our local dialing area, our number is 866-798-8255. Again, you can call us from outside the area toll-free at 866-798-8255. My guests in the studio tonight are both landlord-tenant attorneys from here in San Francisco, Sal Timpano, as well as Jessica Chilick. Please correct me if I pronounced that wrong.
You did. It's Chilick.
I am corrected. Jessica Chilick, I will always remember that. Thank you and welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Also, well, first let me welcome each of you to Your Legal Rights. I'd like to start by inviting anyone who has an interest in landlord-tenant issues, whether from the perspective of perhaps retired couples who string together an income from a small piece of property that they're renting, to folks that are renting their primary residence. So this should include many, many of us to please call in. But before we begin, I'm pleased to announce we have once again returned to having our Call a Lawyer night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air, but will let you speak to one of our attorneys that are standing by, is 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. You won't be on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including tax law, real estate law. Frank Adam, he's both an attorney, a CPA, a real estate broker. He is there to help you out. You have an individual, you're wondering about your money, your numbers. That is the man to call. In estate planning, trust and probate law, Mark Seidenfeld of San Bruno. And in employment law, Bruce Bernstein of San Francisco. We have lawyers standing by tomorrow. For bankruptcy law, Leon Bayer will take your calls. On this month, he's doing it on Friday. Friday from 9 to noon. That's June 27th from 9 to noon at 800-477-3111. Again, that's for a bankruptcy question. And we'll tease these numbers again. Additionally, standing by tomorrow, Janet Frankel, certified family law specialist, will take your calls tomorrow from 9 to 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533. But of all the numbers I give out, if you have questions for Jessica and Sal right here in the studio, again, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. And with that, Sal, Jessica, let me welcome you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to start with this. I'm somebody that's looking to rent a home or an apartment. I found a place that looks kind of cool. It looks like maybe what I have in mind. What kinds of things should I be looking at to make sure I'm safe? Where should I start?
You want to start, Jessica?
Sure. One of the first things that you should pay attention to is what lawyers call habitability questions. Things like, are the windows and doors sufficient to, do they close all the way, and are they airtight? You know, are the floors safe to walk across, or is the linoleum peeling up, or the carpet, you know, frayed? Things like plumbing, is the dripping anywhere? Or is there evidence that it did drip previously, and if so, ask about it? Electrical outlets and switches. Some of the places in San Francisco and other area, parts of the Bay Area are much older, and they may not have enough outlets and things for our modern needs with all of our, you know, devices and whatnot. That's been an issue. Heat is always important. It's required that a minimum amount of heat be provided, either under the tenant's control in the unit or in the building by the landlord. If there are any things that you have questions about, you know, talk to the landlord about what that is.
Do you agree, Jessica, that if a tenant is inspecting a prospective unit and they find dilapidations, might be best to move on to the next unit if they find, you know, multiple dilapidations?
Well, it's certainly a question to raise with the landlord and find out if it's something the landlord is willing to repair before you move in. Mm-hmm. If they're not, then obviously you want to look to something that actually meets state and local requirements.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I find that some tenants that I represent will tell me that the place was in bad condition when they moved in. And so I ask, well, why'd you move in? Did you think it was going to get in better condition? You know, and these tenants were tenants who were not getting any repairs from their landlords. And there was a sign, you know, to them in the fact that when they inspected it, they found a lot of problems. But they took the units anyway. I had several like that. And so it seems like inspecting the unit and, you know, using your own checklist, if one isn't provided by the landlord, would be a prudent thing to do. And get those repairs done before you move in. Otherwise, it might be better to go to another apartment.
And it's always important when dealing with landlord-tenant things are contract issues. So in dealing with contracts, it's always better to have things in writing. So if the landlord agrees to fix something, make a note of that and everybody sign off on it. That way you have a document that shows that they promised.
I agree. Especially if you're going to be, you know, handing over that security deposit and, you know, whatever else comprises the move-in costs. Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Absolutely.
One of the more interesting pieces of advice that I got was bring a glass. Take a glass of water from the faucet. You're going to be drinking that.
Oh.
Or at least cooking with it.
Absolutely.
Sure, why not, Jeff? Let it run. You know, check the toilet, right? Just check the, you know, they should check those things and make sure that they like it, because you're right, you're going to be living there, you know. So, absolutely.
And if a faucet drips, it may not bother you now, but it will after a period of time.
Like maybe after 2 a.m. when there's not a lot else going on.
Yeah. And right now, it seems like a lot of new units are coming online in San Francisco. Have you guys noticed? There's a lot of multiple unit apartment buildings going up. So tenants probably have a good selection right now, at least in comparison to the last several years, of places to live, you know.
But even in new buildings, there are things to look for, because sometimes landlords take shortcuts or the contractors take shortcuts and don't tell the landlord.
Yeah. No, nothing beats a good inspection. I mean, it should be done. And you don't need to bring a contractor with you to do the inspection. Most of them are just, does it pass your test? And if it does, it's probably good enough.
With newer construction, you're probably not going to worry so much about things if you're moving into a new apartment that maybe were broken from someone before, not repaired. But for many renters, you think it's a good idea to take some photographs when you first get there?
I think it's a great idea to take photographs. And if you share them with the landlord, perhaps they can be attached to the contract as well. But they don't have to be. They could be your own notes. And as you know, Jeff, those would be sufficient evidence if it ever needed to be. You know, those photographs that somebody takes, they can document the date and time that they took them and, you know, put their name on it so they remember that they took the photographs. And those would be evidence of the condition of the unit at the time they moved in. Sure.
That will come in handy later when they're moving out and the landlord wants to keep their security deposit.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the landlord for a minute. You brought them up. I'm looking to rent out an apartment unit. Maybe I have an in-law unit in my house or even a room in my house, but a young couple comes in, wants to rent for me. What kinds of things should I ask? What kinds of things can't I ask?
Ah, good question, Jeff. That's probably happening a lot right now, you know, with older people that might be on vacation, you know, might be taking trips, might not be in their house as much as before, or just want some extra income. You know, you can't discriminate when you put your unit up for rental, but when you're taking on a roommate, you have a little bit of discretion as to who you bring in. So, the questions they should ask really are, how late are you going to stay up? Because the bedroom's probably going to be right next to the other bedroom, you know, in a two bedroom. So if they're bringing in roommates, how late are you going to stay up, and how many people are coming in? Because under the rent ordinance, tenants can bring in roommates. And I don't know what your thought is on this, Jessica. But if a retired couple wanted to bring in a roommate in order to supplement their income, perhaps they would bring in a couple, a husband and wife, maybe. What if that couple then brings in another roommate into their room?
I think at some point you start running into either the state or the local requirements as to maximum number of people per bedroom.
Per bedroom, right.
But, but it's a risk that you do take, or if you have a couple, you may end up with a family in that room.
Sure. And I it appears that in that circumstance, the owners could probably evict if it got too uncomfortable without a just cause, pursuant to the rent ordinance.
Well, there's a state law that says that landlords who live in a unit and rent to only one tenant, which is generally taken to be rent out one bedroom, are exempted from the rent ordinance requirements for a just cause for eviction. And they are allowed under state law to terminate that tenancy at any time for any reason, as long as it's not, you know, a bad reason that's going to get the case thrown out of court, like discrimination, retaliation, those sorts of things.
Right. Those are always going to apply. So just to circle back, I think you got to find out, you know, how late they're going to stay up. And if they have any intentions of bringing anybody else in there, you do your credit checks and background checks and things like that, because maybe even more so because they're going to be living with you. So you've got to keep your house in order because you're going to have strangers living there for a while, at least until you get to know them. Yeah.
The things that you're not allowed to ask, Jeff, because you asked that specifically, have things to do with national origin, race, religion, those sorts of things, and also immigration or citizenship status. Those are prohibited.
So if I couch that in something like what types of food do you people like to eat, it's probably going to get me in trouble.
Maybe not. That would actually be good way of doing it, Jeff. Yeah. Skip that question.
I am not encouraging that for anybody.
It depends, though. I mean, if there's somebody with a specific, like, peanut allergy, they may not want to have somebody who uses a lot of peanuts. You know? Makes sense.
But what I'm getting at is you can't get around that by subterfuge. I mean, ultimately, it is what it is. I should not be asking. Somebody looking to rent out a room shouldn't be asking people about their national origin or their ethnicity or their things that don't really affect me living in my house.
Correct. That's right, Jeff.
Well, having just stuck my foot in it there, I don't think I'm really jumping to volunteer that I am Jeff Hayden, and you are listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. We're talking about landlord-tenant issues. And if you have questions for my guests, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. We also have lawyers standing by for your questions tonight. We have attorney, CPA, real estate broker Frank Adam, estate, trust, and probate law Mark Seidenfeld, employment law Bruce Bernstein, all standing by to take your calls and our Call a Lawyer segment. Additionally, we have lawyers ready for taking your calls tomorrow. But if you have questions that are not intended to be on the air, you can call again toll-free at 415-917-KALW. And it looks like we have a few calls coming through, may have overwhelmed our switchboard, but as they're getting ready, what if an all-women's house with female tenants is looking for a roommate? Can they limit prospective tenants to women only?
I think so, Jeff. I think they can. What do you have to say about that, Jessica?
That one has not actually come across my desk, so I'm not sure I've given it as much thought as you have.
No, it hasn't come across mine either, and I don't know if it came across Jeff's at all, but I do think that they can, because they have a valid reason for it.
Is that true, though? But if applicants, I mean, obviously the question is safety issues or that sort of thing, you know.
Sure.
And if that comes up in credit checks or background checks, then that makes sense. But a blanket ban on all, well, also, I mean, it depends how they're defining female as well, because gender and sexual orientation and presentation are all issues.
I agree.
In the national.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It could get messy. But, you know, just for privacy issues at home with a roommate, because that's what it would be for them, even if they're bringing on multiple folks and that becomes a larger situation, the living condition is still roommate because they're using the same kitchen, using the same living room, perhaps using the same bathroom. If mm-hmm. there's only one bathroom, they're going to be using the same bathroom. Even if there's two, there's going to be multiple people using those two bathrooms. So I don't have any authority to point to, but I think that women or, you know, all men could probably exclude the opposite, I think. But I agree with you. There could be a legal issue there. Yeah.
So if you can express real privacy concerns, you may be in a better position than just saying we like to have people that think like we do.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it's too hard to express those privacy concerns. You know, depending on the individuals, there could be, you know, there could be very good reasons for that.
I remember when I was in college and posting, looking for roommates, seeing an ad posted in the wall that said, you know, have this room to rent, a bit more verbiage, only politically correct need apply. Is that something you can do?
I find that more funny than anything else, but what does it really mean, you know?
I bet it means something very different to some of us than it does to others.
Absolutely.
Peter from Berkeley, you're on your legal rights.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about how you would screen roommates. Say you were not able to find somebody within your particular community, but you keep kosher or you're vegan or you keep halal. How do you manage that?
Well, I think things like keeping kosher or halal and that kind of thing are particular religious practices that you're maintaining in your home.
Right.
If you're an owner, obviously it's much easier to screen for people like that. It's much more understandable. Owners are given much more leeway than renters who are subletting.
Mm-hmm.
In that sort of thing, and because obviously that's an issue. Now, if you're in a rental situation where you are all renting from a landlord, but it is the apartment policy that it is halal or kosher or whatever, that probably could be argued for successfully, I think,
mm-hmm.
Because it is a very particular expression of religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And to take that to the next level, if you have somebody that doesn't practice that type of dietary restriction and is using your dishes, your stove, your utensils, it's affecting your ability to practice your own religion.
Exactly.
Correct.
Exactly. So that's why I think you would probably have more success with something like that. You know, if you're the master tenant and you don't actually keep kosher or halal or whatever, and you're in a tenant's applying who wants to, that's also difficult.
Right.
Peter, thank you for joining us. I hope that answered your question.
You did. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think I agree with you on that, Jessica. I think I agree with you. Perhaps those folks could bring in their own, you know, eatery.
A hot plate.
Their own cooking. I mean, you know, plates and you know, perhaps some cooking facilities, but the kitchens are finite, and I don't know that that would be practical.
Probably, I would imagine, and I'm speaking to the experts, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense is if you're renting a unit, you probably don't have that right, and if you're renting within yours, you probably do.
A little bit more. You would have a little bit more because there's a more of a personal aspect to it at that point.
Yeah, I think that would pass muster, depending on how the phrasing that you used and things like that.
Yeah,
but the fact that the household is kosher or halal or has some other, you know, protected expression.
Yeah.
The more that it spills over to the rights of the people already in the house, the better standing you probably have.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good expression.
I would agree with that, Jeff. I really would. You know, society has no interest in putting people together that are going to fight. I mean, we have no interest in doing that. There's no benefit. So if it's an individual unit, that's a completely different story. That's open to the public. Anybody can move in there. I mean, there's some, you know, perhaps some restrictions, but when you're taking on a roommate, that's very personal. You're choosing who you're going to live with. And so it's not considered illegal discrimination as much. Yeah.
And again, if you have questions that you don't want to end up on the air, we have lawyers standing by. You can call them at 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-KALW-917. Ann in San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there.
Hello.
So
hi.
I have a rental house that was built in the 1920s, and there's no cracked or peeling paint inside the unit, but the exterior paint is a major issue because the siding would have to be removed because it's that old tongue and groove pine.
Mm-hmm.
And the paint just won't stay on the wood. What are my obligations for that peeling paint on the outside of the house?
Well, so, assuming that the peeling... I'm sorry, Jessica, were you going to...
I just wanted to clarify, you're the owner of the house, you're the landlord.
Correct.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, assuming that there's no... lead in the paint, because if there is lead, you would be obligated to remove it and dispose of it, you know, properly, so it's not distributed throughout the neighborhood. But assuming that that's not the case, the habitability issues are really on the inside, and if you don't paint the outside, at some point you're going to have problems on the inside. But you don't have an obligation to paint the outside just because the paint is chipping from a legal standpoint, in my opinion, and we'll see what Jessica thinks in a moment here, but it probably needs to be done as regular maintenance anyway, because otherwise you're going to start having problems inside the unit because the wood's going to soak up water and it's going to make its way into the interior.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, but otherwise, yeah, you're not going to, you don't have any obligation to do it right away. Just need to do it before it starts causing damage to the interior from a legal perspective and also from a financial perspective, because it's going to cost you a lot more later. Jessica, do you have anything to add?
That's right. I mean, as long as you're still maintaining essentially a waterproof barrier between the exterior and the interior so that the interior folks don't get exposed to mold or rot or anything like that, then I think you're all right. From an aesthetic point of view and from an insurability point of view and things like that, maintenance is better. But
absolutely. Cheaper doing it sooner as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've got it on my plan. I just didn't know what my timing issue was.
Yeah, there's no rush for you on that with respect to the habitability of the unit. You know, your tenants can use the inside of the unit the same whether or not you paint that wall or the other walls. But in time, it
yeah, I know I need to do something.
Yeah,
probably need to re-site it. So, yeah,
and I've heard that this problem that you're bringing up with those tongue and groove boards, I've heard of this before, too. So you're not the only one experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the paint no longer sticks on that wood. It might be the paint that's available today, or maybe the wood's changed. You know, the wood has changed over time? I don't know, but...
I think that tongue and groove, the nail holes have gotten loose over time, and the wood doesn't stay in one place, so the paint cracks.
Yeah, may be it. But I have heard of this problem with that tongue and groove. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's very helpful.
Right. Anne, thank you for joining us. Hope that answered your question. Mm-hmm. And Lewis from San Francisco, you're in your legal rights.
Well, hi. So I'm thinking of a scenario where, you know, a landlord is rented to multiple people in an apartment, let's just say three people. And then, of course, at some point in time, one of them moves out. And let's say there was a lease, at least at some point in time, maybe that lease has expired. But regardless, my question really is about, I guess it's the responsibility of the roommates to inform the landlord that, hey, someone's moved off the lease or someone's moved out or we're bringing in a new tenant. But I've also heard that there is some, that if the tenant is aware that there's this new person, that over time, by default, that person becomes a valid part of the household. And I guess my question is, well, doesn't that leave some gray area? And is there some responsibility of the landlord to know who's living in the house? And I guess part of the second part of the question is, you know, no one wants to put up cameras or be nosy and things like that. But how? What about this? Is it true that the landlord has responsibility to know that, okay, a new person has moved in and, okay, now we have to rewrite the lease or do something like that? Or not, and that's really just my question.
Right. No, I think I understand what you're asking here. Yes, a landlord does have a right to know who's living in the apartment. If the landlord rented to individuals, like rented individual bedrooms with individual contracts, then the people would obviously be telling the landlord when they're changing out. If, on the other hand, it is a contract that everybody all signed one lease, and you're substituting out roommates, if you are under the rent ordinance protections in San Francisco or some of the other cities locally, you have the right to replace your roommates. But, you know, depending on what's in your rental agreement, which still controls even after the, like, if it was a year lease and it's now, you know, a year and a half or whatever, it converts to month to month, but it's still the controlling document. So if that lease says that the landlord needs to approve who moves in, then they can ask you for the information to do background and security checks and things like that.
But so does the landlord supposed to know about these things? Because at some point, that one person who moved out will become two persons, and then it's possible that third person will move out, and now you have three people living there that really weren't the original renters. And I guess, you know, I've heard that the landlord, if it can be proved that they know about this change, that, okay, it doesn't matter because by default they are now, you know, regular renters. And I guess the question is, if that's true, then the landlord has to be super vigilant about these things and set up a camera or something like that, or just be nosy, and that doesn't seem right either. So I'm just wondering if it's true that the landlord is supposed to know about these things, or, you know, if they're not told, how would they know about it, kind of, you know.
Hi, Lewis, this is Sal Timpano. Let me interject on that. The landlord can ask his tenants, who are the people that are living there. They can ask the question. If a landlord doesn't know that somebody's living there, even if the person's there for a long time, if the person's never paid rent to the landlord or spoken to the landlord or written to the landlord, that person is going to be a subtenant of the other tenants that are living there. And still a tenant, but a subtenant. So their rights are going to be second to the original tenants.
What happens when those original tenants move out, though?
The original tenants move out, the subtenant has a right to stay there, can't be evicted, but is subject to a one-time reset of rent to market.
Can't be evicted if the landlord was aware that they were there. Now, under the San Francisco rent ordinance, one of the just causes for eviction is an unauthorized subtenant left after the master tenant moves out.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But the longer they're there, you know, the more likelihood that the landlord would have known that the person was there.
Well, Lewis, that's thank the gray you for, area, right?
It is, but, and you're starting to march into gray areas when you shield the landlord from it. no matter how long they're there. Lewis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. Rachel, Olaf, both from San Francisco, we'll be with you in just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
A reminder that our lawyers are standing by to answer your legal questions off the air. In tax law, we have a CPA, real estate broker, attorney, Frank Adam from Pacifica. We have estate planning, trust, and probate law, attorney Mark Seidenfeld out of San Bruno. And in employment law, we have Bruce Bernstein from San Francisco, all of whom are standing by to answer your calls off the air right now at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And with that, Rachel from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So my question is, I'm a tenant and I have two roommates. And I want to have my boyfriend move in with me. I have like kind of a large enough space, a private bathroom, private room, private roof. Do I need to get permission from my roommates, or can they object? I guess, like, what are the requirements there? And then, like, also, do I need to get permission from the landlord, and what are the requirements there? Yeah, thank you so much.
Do you have a written lease, Rachel?
Yes, we do, and I am... It's like one lease, one document that all three, like me and my two roommates, have signed.
Okay. So then you're all three original tenants.
Yes.
That document, that lease, might say what your rights are with respect to assigning or subletting. You would be subletting to your boyfriend who comes into your part of the unit, into your private mm-hmm. part of the unit.
If he pays.
If he pays rent.
Right. Got it.
What would his status be if he doesn't pay rent, Jessica?
He would be her guest, essentially.
Even if he stays there for months?
Right. He would be her co-occupant. The San Francisco Rent Board allows two people per bedroom, so I'm not sure. I mean, clearly, you would, from a getting along together point of view, you'd want to talk to your roommates about it, and your landlord would have, a right to know who was living in the unit.
Absolutely. But so far from assuming the lease has a provision where the landlord has the right to screen this guest, most likely she'll get past that as long as the unit can house four people, right? The occupancy issues. I think two or three people for bedroom is typical. I forget. Mm-hmm. But it's either two or three. So I think she's left with the social issue with the other two roommates. I think. Mm-hmm. I think she'll get past the landlord, that the landlord will approve it. But then there's the social issue, I think, with the other two roommates as to how that's going to go.
Some of it is going to depend on if he's paying rent. If he's paying rent to you, then he's your subtenant, And if he's not paying rent to you, if he's paying rent directly to the landlord, everybody's rent needs to be adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not paying rent directly to the landlord, if he's not paying rent at all, which happens, I mean, that may be a reason why people move in together.
Sure.
Then the question becomes the social question amongst you and your roommates.
So is there a legal difference then between if he is paying rent to me and then I pass that on to the landlord, or if he's paying directly to the landlord? Does that change the legal situation at all?
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
Because right now you all three are on the lease and you're paying the landlord. If one of you leaves and leaves the other two on the hook, you're responsible for that whole rent, okay, whether you have a third roommate or not. And that's if you pay to the landlord. If the incoming boyfriend has an agreement with the landlord that he is also on the lease and pays, you know, directly to the landlord, then, you know, he gets the same benefits.
The rent's going to essentially be divided by four at that point.
You know, and however, if he's paying rent to you, that you then pass on to the landlord as part of your share,
yeah,
then he is your subtenant. And you step into the shoes of a landlord as far as he goes. I mean, as far if there's issues with him and the other subtenant and the other tenants, then you would be responsible to either sort it out or, you know, remove him from the unit, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So, but Rachel, I think I heard you ask, what's the difference if he pays rent to you or not? And with respect to his ability to stay there, I don't see any difference. Do you, Jessica? If he's paying rent to Rachel or not, I think she can bring him in either way. I don't mm-hmm. think it matters whether she brings him in as a subtenant of hers or as a guest.
No, it doesn't matter as far as like occupancy and whether the landlord can take possession. It may matter as far as the social issues with the other two.
But it won't matter if he's paying rent to Rachel or not. The social issues are not going to be concerned. They're not going to really care. Well, I mean, maybe they will, but it doesn't seem like that would be an issue, whether he's paying some of her rent or all of the rent. Maybe he's going to pay all her rent because they get that room.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, if you are paying utilities, you may want to redivide the utilities to accommodate the
fact that there's
four people in the unit instead of three.
Totally agree with that. Yes.
That might smooth some of any issues with the other two.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, sorry, just, and, you know, thinking through this, if you're bringing in a boyfriend and you've got three females in the unit, then you may run into the question we had before about, you know, are we going to be discombobulated
unit.
Or in an uncomfortable position because now there's a guy in the midst.
Yeah.
Would that just be something that we would have to kind of socially work out, or is that something that's like a... They have a kind of legal right to say, like, hey, we don't feel comfortable having a guy in the midst or something like that.
It's all social. It has nothing to do with your rental contract with the landlord.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Rachel, thank you for joining us. I hope that answered your questions.
Yep, thank you so much.
Thank you. And for those listening, I am Jeff Hayden, and you are listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. My guests, landlord-tenant attorneys Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano, are taking your questions regarding landlord-tenant issues. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're calling from outside the calling area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Olaf from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call. I got a comment. I'm a senior, and I'm just learning to become a lab-based paint inspector. So the comment is about the landlady who was calling in from Berkeley about the peeling paint. There's actually two requirements that landlords have. One is landlords have to disclose to their tenants that lead is present. And I assume her house was built before 1978, and all our houses had either paint in the exterior paint or in the interior paint. So that's one requirement, and a landlord actually needs to make sure that disclosure is acknowledged by the tenant. So the tenant needs to like notify or certify that he or she received that information. And the second one, if she's going to repair the exterior paint, she needs to hire a company that is certified to do paint renovation. So because lead is toxic and it impairs the growth of brain development, especially for kids. So there are like those two additional requirements that I think Sal and Jessica sort of forgot to the law.
Olaf, our connection's breaking up a little bit, but I got through the fact that you felt that Sal and Jessica might add that to their comments, and I think maybe next time we do this, you might want to join us. You're more than welcome. But thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, if you have questions regarding family law questions, certified specialist Janet Lee Frankel is available to take your calls tomorrow. That's June 26th. Between 10 and 11:30 in the morning. The number to our San Francisco office is 415-362-9533. Be sure to tell them that you're a Your Legal Rights listener. If you have a bankruptcy question, Leon Baer, bankruptcy law certified specialist, will take calls this Friday, June 27th, between 9 a.m. and noon at 1-800-477-3111. Again, that's 800-477-3111. And again, no charge to you for calling, but be sure to tell them that you are a listener of Your Legal Rights. So where we left off, we were talking about things we wanted to do on the way in. We talked about maybe taking photographs or really inspecting things, maybe seeing if the furnace works and doesn't make the place smell. Generally, habitability issues that you might not want to, you know, you wouldn't notice walking through someone else's house, but if it's empty and you're moving in, you're going to want to know that before you live there. And we talked about such things on the way in. Let's talk about the way out. What kinds of things are we going to want to make note of to protect ourselves?
Well, Jessica had mentioned, I think it was Jessica, you mentioned taking pictures on the way in.
Right.
You'd want to take out those pictures on the way out, you know, have your hands on them. Of course, when you move, you've got to give proper notice of vacating. You look to your lease, and if your lease is silent on that, then you can look to state law. But you give proper notice. And then,
let me ask you a question about proper notice. If you don't mind, I'm going to hit the pause button for a moment.
Sure.
You mentioned proper notice and look to your lease, and presumably it sets out a term of typically maybe 30 days, maybe 60, something like that.
Right.
Suppose I find my next place to live and my rent is paid on the first of the month every month. So I pay my rent on June 1st. And June 15th, I score this great place that's ready for me to move in. So I rent the new place and I don't want to be giving money away and paying rent in both places. Can I give notice on June 15th that I'll be out on July 15th? My lease is silent.
If your lease is silent, then yes. Okay.
Because it's 30 days, right?
Right.
From June 15th to July 15th.
Yeah.
30 days.
Yeah.
So the fact that the rental period is from the 1st to the 1st doesn't mean I have to wait till the following 1st to give notice?
No, you can give notice at any point. The question is what you do about that rent in the in any kind of overlapping or in any holding over period. Those are your that's going to be the question for, between the landlord and the tenant is how they're going to handle the rent.
Well, it's that second half of the July rent that's going to be an issue. The landlord's going to say, I'm entitled to that, you know, 15 days worth of rent. Because you gave notice in the middle of the month.
What do you think? Do you think that the landlord's entitled to that rent? Or do you think that I gave notice on the in the middle of June, I should be able to give him 30 days notice and leave?
Well, my understanding of Civil Code Section 1950.5, which is what controls the security deposit question and rent, is that when the tenant turns in keys and their tenancy ends, That is when their time to pay rent ends. If they did not give the landlord sufficient time to be able to, you know, clean it up and re-rent quickly, they may be liable for a few days of of rent while the landlord gets the place ready. But that's not technically rent. It's holdover damages, or in the, it can be deducted from the security deposit, which is separate from rent.
Thank you. And Sal, I'm sorry to hit the pause button in the middle of that answer, but Douglas from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much for having this program. My question is regarding, I am the primary leaseholder on a three-unit place, and I got in people that I like living with, but if it goes south, these subtenants are on the lease now, and I'm just wondering if I wanted to be able to have them leave. They're living in my home. It's not like they're renting a room that's not attached to my home. I was just wondering what legal recourse I could have to ask them to leave.
Could you repeat that part, Douglas? Are they living with you or in a something, you know, a room next to your building?
Yeah, I apologize if I wasn't being perfectly clear. It's a three-bedroom unit. They're living in the two other bedrooms, and I was the first or primary leaseholder.
Got it.
And then they were added on, and I'm just wondering if I have any, as that person, it's my place, you know, do I have the right to ask them to leave?
Who added them on?
How?
Who added the other two on? You?
Yeah.
Okay, so you picked two other roommates to live in the two other rooms.
Yes.
And do they pay rent to you or directly to the landlord?
They could pay to the landlord, but right now they pay it to me.
Well, that makes you a master tenant. And if you're in San Francisco and your unit is under the rent ordinance controls, then you have the same rights and obligations a landlord does. That is, most of the time, you have to have a just cause to evict them. Now, the only way you can get around that as a master tenant is if you have a disclosure in writing before they sign a lease or before they pay you rent. A written disclosure saying that this subtenancy is not subject to the San Francisco rent ordinance just cause eviction controls.
And one other thing. Go ahead, Douglas.
I apologize for interrupting. Does a text count?
A text?
A text message count as written disclosure.
Huh. That's a good question.
I'm not sure that that's actually been litigated to something that is a rule. I suspect that if you had the text messages and it showed that there was an acknowledgement, it's like, oh, okay, this is not under the rent ordinance, and the prospective subtenant said, oh, okay, I understand, then that could probably hold up.
Got it.
But I don't know that that's been litigated on such a fine point that it's actually binding law.
I'm not aware of it either. And another thing, Douglas, you mentioned that they could pay to the landlord. What do you mean by that?
There's a portal that we can pay our rent on, and if they chose to, they would be able to pay to that portal instead of me just paying everything, them paying me and then me just paying everything.
Okay. All right. Well, if they're not doing that now, they're your subtenants. But if they start paying through the portal, they may become your co-tenants, you know, just masters as well.
Douglas, does the portal have a password for you to get in?
Yes.
Would it be advisable for Douglas to change the password so that he continues making those payments and collecting from them to be in a position to exercise more rights?
Yeah, if they know about the passwords, yeah. But if they're using your password to pay the rent, then they're really giving you the rent and you're paying the rent because they're using your password. You know what I mean?
Got it.
So, yes, but yeah, I agree with Jeff. If you think that your password's been breached, you should probably change it so that the rent goes through you only.
That's a benefit to you, Douglas, because as a master tenant, you have the rights and obligations to evict the subtenants. However, if the subtenants become elevated to co-tenants by paying the landlord directly, then only the landlord can evict them.
Got it.
Douglas, I hope that's of help, and thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, and you as well. And for those who want, our lawyers are standing by to answer your legal questions off the air. You can reach attorney, real estate broker, CPA Frank Adam from Pacifica. estate planning, trust, and probate law certified specialist Mark Seidenfeld of San Bruno, employment law certified specialist Bruce Bernstein of San Francisco. You can reach them directly, confidentially, and toll-free at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Michael from Oakland, you're on the line. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Michael, are you still with us?
I think we lost him, Jeff.
Well, while we're waiting for Michael, feel free to call us back. Joanne from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having this wonderful program.
Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
So what's your
thank
question,
you.
Joanne?
Well, I have two, but one is... One is, like, I live on the third floor of a Victorian flat, and there was a leak in unit one on the bottom floor, and the leak spread all over, like, the furnace room and our storage room, and so I called the landlord, and... He came over because he really wants all of us to move out because it's in the like the lower height and he thinks he can get like a lot more rent. So what he said was, well, actually what they did, they took out more boards so that the leak from unit one, it would extend over and it would fall on my dryer. According to the lease, we have unit one, unit two, unit three. We each have like a washer-dryer hookup. So now the water, whenever they take a shower or a bath, it just runs down on my dryer. So I put a tarp over it to prevent it from, you know, being ruined.
That's a good idea, Joanne. That's good. You've got to contact your landlord and tell him that the tarp is a temporary fix and that they have to find the source of the leak. Perhaps the boards were removed to let them dry. Maybe they had to be removed because they were damaged, or maybe
exactly.
They were holding water. So, but and that's fine.
It's all very damp.
Yeah. So there's going to be some dry. You know, might have to use some drying techniques. Maybe some fans or something. I don't know, but. The landlord has to take care of this particular situation because it's not only inconvenient for you, but it's also unsanitary to have that water leaking
exactly.
down on top of an area that you're going to be in doing your laundry and for everybody else too, for that matter. So you should contact the landlord about that immediately. Go ahead. I interjected that. I think you had some more to say.
Right, because I did that, and I had a social worker call to say that it was, you know, and we sent pictures and videos and everything, and he said, tell them all to move.
Well,
he thinks he can get a lot more money. Well, he can, but he'd have to pay a lot of...
You know, Joanne... I mean, that's fine that he may think that. However, if you have a rental agreement in San Francisco, and certainly in the lower Haight, I believe there's not much new construction, so it's all under rent control, you have the right to stay as long as you are paying rent, and at least some of the rent. The rent board has rules that say that if there is a reduction in housing services, you're entitled to a reduction in rent for the period that the housing service was reduced. And in this instance, your unit came with a washer-dryer hookup that you took advantage of, and now this leak is, you know, potentially messing up your dryer or interfering with your use of that hookup. So you may want to contact the San Francisco Rent Board about any claim about a reduction in housing services.
But I don't think they do anything for Section 8.
Oh, I see. So then you need to call San Francisco Housing Authority about that, because they have a contract with the landlord, and he is supposed to make sure that the habitability issues, things like leaks and stuff that we were talking about before, are all taken care of.
Although, Jessica, I will say this. I don't think Section 8 is – I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think the rent ordinance still applies. I think it still applies. I don't know where you got that idea, Joanne, but I think you should take Jessica's advice on that and call the rent board. Just let them know up front that
it's worth a call.
Absolutely, and I think that they'll you can file a decrease in services petition even though you're Section 8. Certainly, if you call the housing authority, they're going to contact the landlord and perhaps withhold his rent payment as a incentive to get the repairs. You know, he's obligated. In order for him to get the money from the Section 8 program, he has to provide a habitable space that's code compliant and also compliant with the terms of your lease. So you should call both places.
Joanne, I hope this has been of help, but thank you for joining us.
Number two, could I mention number two?
It's got to be fairly quick.
Very quick. There was a window that was falling out, so I had to take tape and hold it in. It's like the fourth window that's fallen out, but I did tape it up. And then they came, and they replaced it with a piece of plyboard, but it didn't, like, match up with the window, so that there was still, like, maybe half an inch on each side. And the water was just coming in really bad. I mean, it got into all of the carpets. It got into the walls. It caused this horrible mold and mildew behind the couches.
Same answer, Joanne. I'm only interrupting now because we really have to take the next call. But you need to tell that to your housing authority and also to the rent board. Anything else, Jessica, for her?
And you might want to call the San Francisco Department of Building Inspections to come out and see if it's significant enough for a notice of violation to the landlord.
Yeah, and maybe do that after you call the other two first and see what happens there, I think.
Joanne, I hope we've been of help, and thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Jane from San Francisco, we're down to about a minute. Jane, are you still with us?
Yes, off air.
You're on the air.
No, I didn't mean to be.
Okay, thank you and have a great night. Thank you for joining us. We have about a minute left if you two would like to sum up really quickly. Anything you would like to add?
Yeah, you have anything, Jessica?
Well, as far as going back to what Jeff was saying about when you move out, your tenants who give 30 days notice or whatever's required in their rental agreement are entitled to an preliminary exit inspection 2 weeks before you move out. And then you can identify any issues that the landlord wants to deduct from your rental or your security deposit, and then you can discuss about whether any of that can be repaired by you to save your security deposit.
Right. In other words, the landlord comes in 2 weeks before you move out, and you show him the place, and the landlord basically okays it. Should probably sign something too that says pre-inspection has been done and everything's fine. Take pictures too, but it gives the tenant an opportunity to make the repairs. The landlord says, no, this is not right. This is no good. And then instead of letting somebody else fix it, the tenant can fix it before they move.
And that'll be the last words on the subject tonight. Thank you both. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been the landlord-tenant issues. My guests tonight have been Sal Timpano and Jessica Chilek. Thank you both for joining us. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where my guest will speak of preventing domestic violence and seeking injunctive relief under the Domestic Violence Prevention Act. 2 weeks from tonight, we will discuss police, community, race relations on Your Legal Rights right here at KALW. Of course, we thank our listeners standing by joining us, the attorneys standing by taking your calls, at the controls, Joanne Marr, and to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and thanks to you for listening. I'm Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney.